Coming up.
When someone says to you, oh, how are you?
Tell us a bit about yourself.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
What do you want to know? Do you want to know my whole life history, or do you want to know a little bit? What is it you want to know?
Digital learning that's dramatically different. Welcome to this TED Learning podcast.
Hello, I'm Darren, and welcome to the TED Learning podcast. And today we're talking about autism, and I've got Kimberly and Mwena from Autism Oxford with me. So, Kimberly, first of all, let's just talk to you and tell us a little bit about yourself and your role within Autism Oxford.
My name's Kimberly Ashrin. I'm the CEO at Autism Oxford. I'm also an autism nurse consultant by background, and I'm also the mum to two beautifully autistic young ladies at home as well.
And Mwena, how about you?
I am the managing director at Autism Oxford, also an autism practitioner. I've got a long background in HR, so I do a lot of employment support for autistic individuals. And I'm also autistic myself and have ADHD, and also a parent to two neurodivergent children, one who is autistic and one who has ADHD and dyslexia.
Talk me through then from your different perspectives, you know, how Autism Oxford makes a difference.
Hopefully positively influencing the wider community around autism, but more broadly neurodivergency as a whole. We're a team of clinicians, educational practitioners, as well as autistic adults or expert family members. And we blend lived experience alongside evidence-based research to support the autistic community.
And we're very, very focused on people's strengths and, you know, with the right support, helping them to kind of see those strengths and kind of use them in life.
We don't talk about autism so much, but neurodivergence, just talk me through that change and why it's important.
Neurodivergence really is more of an umbrella term and a collective, and I think it's really important to kind of recognize, because so we work with obviously predominantly autistic people, but a lot of people that we see through our service also have other neurodivergence, so other kind of neurodevelopmental conditions such as ADHD. It's a really, I mean, that's probably one of the top ones. It's very, I think, a high percentage of people who have an autism diagnosis may have an ADHD diagnosis as well. Thinking about things like dyslexia, dyspraxia, you know, Tourette's, there's quite a long list, but it all kind of falls under this neurodivergence, you know, neurodivergent umbrella. And being neurodivergent essentially means that our brains just work a bit differently to people who aren't neurodivergent, so neurotypical.
It's another way of being rather than something that's quote unquote wrong. Do you find that helps in kind of tackling any bias or, you know, or perceptions in people?
We are starting to see that a lot of people are identifying more or refer to themselves as, you know, neurodivergent. And that may be because, you know, someone like myself, where I've got, you know, I'm not just autistic, you know, I have ADHD as well. So it's probably a little bit easier to kind of explain. But also, I think from the kind of viewpoint of society, I think it's accepted more. And I think we're really starting to see the kind of the benefits of that. I think there's still a long way to go in terms of kind of, you know, just getting the kind of the knowledge and the information out there. But I guess that's, you know, that's why we're here.
When you think about the workplace and how are perceptions changing in the workplace for neurodivergence?
We're certainly seeing a lot of kind of different organisations from different sectors, so both kind of public and private sector, coming to us that, you know, are really wanting to kind of understand how they can better support their neurodivergent employees. And there's some, you know, there's some really kind of basic kind of reasonable adjustments in there that are actually, you know, really suitable for everyone. They would benefit everyone. Unemployment rates with autistic individuals and neurodivergent individuals are really, really high still. Organizations are starting to kind of recognize that, you know, the kind of the talent pool that they have. But I suppose it's not just kind of recruiting, it's then looking at kind of that retention and actually supporting employees to kind of thrive in that environment as well. So it's kind of, it's getting that right.
So that's really interesting. And just talking about the problems experienced when recruiting people, at TED Learning, we run a course on being consciously inclusive in that hiring process. And so here's a drama-based scene we filmed to illustrate the kind of problems encountered by an autistic candidate.
The TED Learning
Virtual Theatre.
Don't worry, take your time. It's not a trick question.
Do you need a reminder?
No. Well, just in case, what three skills and strengths do you feel that you could bring to the role?
I know it's a stressful situation being in an interview. I don't envy you.
I think I'm loyal, diligent, detail-focused. Loyal, diligent, detail-focused.
Yeah. Can you give us an example?
My previous job, I highlighted a problem with the payroll software. It glitched when determining the difference between contractor and employee deductions. I worked for a whole month on it, every day, even weekends, but I got through it.
That's impressive.
It comes with the territory. I'm autistic.
Oh. That's absolutely fine.
No worries at all. If it helps, you don't come across as autistic. You're obviously high functioning.
Absolutely. Personally, I would never have guessed. But thank you for sharing.
Okay.
I think most people are on the autistic scale, aren't they? I mean, I know there are probably a lot of people here who are on the spectrum, in a good way.
Absolutely.
Right.
So it's not an issue for us as a business at all, so please don't worry about it.
Right.
So what impact, if any, might your autism have on you in this role?
Okay, so a bit awkward when you have someone in the room and obviously you have questions when you're recruiting that are, you know, set questions. And then if someone comes along who has autism, you know, that situation can occur. And we were talking about high unemployment for autistic people. Just talk me through then the kind of lived experience of autistic people when they go to a job interview, for example.
Unfortunately, I think a lot of job interviews are not very accessible, and that can really start from the job advert. It tends to be really common to add corporate lingo and all the kind of the fluff that you would add into that. So already that kind of communication and the kind of the information you need about a role can sometimes be lost in a very long kind of job advert, and things might not be clear. Application forms for a lot of neurodivergent individuals are not accessible at all. Usually you still have to, you know, provide a cover letter and a CV along with that. So already there's a lot of things to kind of process. Already we're kind of not off to a good start because it's not very accessible. When we support employers potential employees kind of going through that process, we think about, well, okay, we've got the set of questions and we obviously want to keep these the same for everyone, but it's, you know, you could definitely try and kind of word them a lot more directly, because I think, you know, there's lots of kind of really open-ended questions that can be interpreted in, you know, in different ways.
So give us the example then of perhaps a question that doesn't help neurodivergent people and how you can make it more accessible to people with neurodivergence.
I think my biggest one is, tell us a bit about yourself.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
What do you want to know? Do you want to know my whole life history, or do you want to know a little bit? What is it you want to know? Personal, professional? I don't know.
That is a perfect example. And I think, you know, and there's the same as, you know, we say to people when, you know, when someone says to you, oh, how are you? Do you mean right now? Or do you mean this whole past week? It's so open-ended. And, you know, there's so many questions that I think an autistic individual would be kind of asking themselves. And I think it would, again, it's usually one of the first questions in an interview. It's quite a standard question.
As neurotypicals, use that as an icebreaker. We think that's a lovely way, just breaking the ice. It's a nice, easy question from a neurotypical point of view. So someone who's not autistic. So we was interviewing yesterday, and Moena does our recruitment process, don't you, at Autism Watson? You're great. And you provide the interview questions ahead of time, so someone knows what we're going to ask. This is not a memory test, and we're not testing people on the spot. And they were saying the feedback we had from the person we was interviewing was how great it was to had those interview questions, but actually how direct they were. She said, and she was talking and having a joke, actually interesting about this, how, you know, so tell me a bit about yourself, what do you want to know, and how refreshing it wasn't to have that and the anxiety, because often I'm like a rabbit in headlights. I don't know what to do or what to say. And then I feel then I'm constantly catching up then with all the other kind of questions, normally in a very standard, unaccessible interview. So it was really interesting feedback.
I'm putting you on the spot here, but, you know, three key pointers to someone from HR who, you know, needs to make sure that their questions and their process is accessible to all, including people with neurodivergence. What would your recommendations or your thoughts be?
Need to be asking quite directly if someone requires reasonable adjustments. You know, I suppose almost without asking someone to disclose, because, you know, that's something that not everyone feels comfortable to do so. But you can certainly request reasonable adjustments during the recruitment process. So I think that's, you know, that's probably number one. Number two would be to get those interview questions right. So again, very direct. That's not, you know, that's not going to be harmful to anyone that's neurotypical. That's probably going to be quite useful as well. And also useful for the, you know, for the interviewers, because I think, you know, it's just helping build that kind of communication bridge with anyone that's coming for an interview. And then I think thirdly, so thinking about that, you know, that clip and, you know, that kind of question, and thinking about kind of disclosure during an interview, I think, you know, the response should be, you know, how can we support you? I think that's the kind of thing. So, you know, kind of being open-minded and understanding that autistic people and neurodivergent people are very, very different. So it's really important to kind of understand someone's personal needs.
For me, it's very much about that accessibility of the pathway. So knowing what to expect and doing what I say. So social stories to me are a big thing. So knowing where I'm going, what the building looks like. We all get anxiety, I think, anyway, when you think, am I in the right place? Is it the right build? I can't see any signage. So having a picture of where I'm going, what that looks like, and who I'm going to meet as well. So often a lot of the autistic community experience facial blindness, so not being able to recognize people from a face, but actually clues in terms of hair, glasses give me some indicators. So if I have a picture of me in my hair down and my glasses, maybe I wouldn't want to change my glasses that day. That will be really useful. But also then I know who to expect, because actually, who is Kim? I don't know who Kim is. And even if someone comes into reception and goes, oh, hi, Darren, nice to meet you, how do I know that is actually Kim? It might not be. It might be just a very friendly person.
Definitely. And there's lots of, I think, lots of kind of organizations out there where if you looked at their website, there wouldn't be information about, you know, about the employees that work there, or pictures, or, you know, so I think that's really important. It's something we provide, isn't it? And just a little kind of introduction, really.
And then it's sticking to those questions you sent ahead of time. It's always easy to, I'm going to creep an extra question in there, or I make it a sub question, but stick to what you sent out and actually stick to an allocated amount of time. So if you said the interview is going to be 45 minutes or up to 45 minutes, make sure you don't go over that, because actually, you know, I always relate it to, and I don't know, you might be able to correct me here, but like going to the dentist, you can manage, because you know it's not going to last forever. It's only going to be a couple of minutes. I've only got to manage it for this amount of time. Actually, it's easier to kind of put that mask on and to camouflage if I know I've only got to do it for 45 minutes, rather as you then change the goalpost and I'm here for an hour and a half. As an, you know, on the interview panel, I think, oh, that's a great interview, you know, so chatty, got a good rapport. But actually, long term, I've then straight away already, my trust has gone. I don't do what I say. Similarly, when you follow up, if you say you're going to ring them that night to follow up with the outcome of the interview, please do. Please don't wait. Even if it's to ring and say, look, we haven't reached an outcome, I'm really sorry, but I will ring. At least then you've committed and you've still said what you're going to do. So that they would be my top tips as a neurotypical employer.
What are the pros and cons of disclosing, not disclosing to the person who's applying for a position, but also to someone who's recruiting? You know, what are the pros and cons?
So I think, you know, I think it's more about, I suppose, you know, someone's personal choice, and a lot of it comes down to feeling safe. There are, again, lots of environments, unfortunately, where neurodivergent individuals don't feel safe to disclose. And I think, you know, when we're thinking about kind of recruitment between, you know, a potential employer and that candidate, it really, I think for everyone, whether you're neurodivergent or neurotypical, I think it's very easy to forget that that is actually a two-way street. That employer and that business or that organization, they need to be right for you as well. So that's that's really, really important. And I think in terms of kind of disclosing, there's obviously the kind of the legal aspect. So it's, you know, I think a big positive to disclosing if whether you're autistic or neurodivergent is you're covered and protected by the Equality Act 2010. So then, you know, even thinking again about reasonable adjustments being put in during the recruitment process going forward as well. So right from the very start, all the way from, you know, the very start of the recruitment process, all the way through to interviewing, onboarding, and, you know, that complete kind of employee life cycle, you know, should have that support in place. I think when it does become more of a con, I suppose, is, you know, is thinking about organisations that are not, you know, I suppose that kind of misinformation and, you know, and again, someone's kind of safety and potential risk to discrimination. And I think that's really difficult for, you know, for someone that is coming in for an interview for 45 minutes to try and kind of pick up on that, or again, pick up on that from emails or, you know, a job application. That's a really hard thing for someone to try and gauge. So it's, you know, it is a very personal choice, but I think ultimately it comes down to how safe someone feels.
If you're an employee and a colleague, and it may have been disclosed, it may not have been disclosed to you, you know, what's the best way to accommodate people who you think may be neurodivergent, because they may not disclose, to make sure they feel included and feel welcome when they're working with you or joining your team?
Everything that we do to around accessibility is accessible to everyone. So neurotypicals, ADHD, autistic, dyslexic. So taking that approach that actually this is going to help everyone is really valuable. And I think we are starting to see that. I think we see some of the benefits coming out of the pandemic and about home working and about some of the impacts of in a shared office space and how that can influence everyone's productivity and efficiency. So I think actually, you know, thinking about those things, whether it's thinking about noise and how we can reduce that noise. So is there breakout areas? Is there actually smaller office spaces? So you can still get some of that collaboration going, but actually it's not everyone just having a chit chat all the time. So having that flexibility, I think, is key for everyone at work. So actually, you know, wouldn't it be an amazing place where actually we don't have to go around and say, I'm autistic or I'm ADHD or I'm dyslexic, because actually, you know what, I'm just Kim. Hi, I'm Kim, and I'm coming to your workforce, and this is what I can bring. And actually, we're just an accessible community, as well as, you know, employers and organisations as a whole. That's our aspirations, that, you know, hopefully in 5 to 10 years' time, or even sooner, that that's where we'll be in that sort of position. But we're not quite there yet in terms of that, because we still have people with misunderstanding of what being autistic means or having a neurodivergency means.
That's really interesting, isn't it? Because I suppose people who are older, who were brought up in times that weren't so aware, you know, may think, crikey, I just can't do X, or, you know, what is it? Why can't I do this when people I know can do X? And you know, I don't know about you, but I know instances, people I know who have, in quite later life, have a diagnosis of a neurodivergence. So, and that can impact on them, because all of a sudden, you know, they're not this person they thought they were. You know, what's your experience has been of that?
I didn't discover I was neurodivergent until I was 30. So I think the process, you know, to kind of to get to that point was really, I suppose, awakening in some way. But there's a lot of kind of self-identity that, you know, you really have to reevaluate and think, you know, even hearing you say, you know, that kind of questioning yourself, why can't I do this? Or, you know, and even the other way, you know, oh, I'm really good at this, I find this really easy, why? But I think a lot of things are kind of that, I suppose, that kind of self-doubt and self-questioning and not really understanding why. And then obviously having that clarity is really, really powerful and really, really, I think, liberating in a way. And kind of, again, it does make you kind of take a good look at your own kind of identity. And then, you know, I suppose it's that journey afterwards and trying to kind of figure out who you really are and your kind of your strengths and what you might need support with. Just, you know, to, I think, flourish in life and, you know, be your most kind of authentic self. So it's a tough journey to kind of go through, but very, very rewarding at the same time.
Yeah, and we've had lots of people come to us very much later on in life. You know, we had a chap, you know, and he always stays in my mind because my heart really went out to him. He was in his 50s and he'd been married 3 times. And he's like, this is the third divorce I'm going through. So there's definitely something wrong with me now, because there's something I'm doing wrong because I've not got it right 3 times and I'm trying and I don't know what it is. And there was nothing wrong with him. He's just autistic. And actually his partners didn't have that understanding. So to be able to negotiate and change. And, you know, when we went through that discovery journey with him and, you know, we shared with him that he's autistic, you know, he was like, oh, so that's why I have my own business in IT. And that's why I work on my own, because actually I'm much better on my own. And this might be why I struggle with relationships, because actually that partnership is not something that's a real strength for me, but actually me being able to focus and really kind of help problem solve and analyze things was a real strength for him. So, you know, there's one thing telling someone they're autistic, but doing that self-discovery journey as well with someone is just so empowering. You know, like what you were saying, Maureen, about that, then reevaluating your whole identity and what these things mean. And just going on from your point, Darren, about the older generation and what autism is, you know, and I certainly can relate to lots of older people that I've come into contact with who have a very stereotypical view of autism being hand-flapping, tiptoe-walking, non-verbal boy, so not females as well. And autism is so, so much more than that. And, you know, there's so many strengths that come with being autistic. We assessed someone who was 78 last week, you know, gone all through their life, a very successful career. But actually for them, they came to this point because they're like, you know what, the same as what you were saying earlier, why are these things so incredibly hard? You know, everyone else has found those things so easy. Their grandchildren had been diagnosed as being autistic and ADHD. So they were like, I can relate so much to my grandchild. I want to go through this discovery journey for myself. And there's that element of contentness, I think. So, you know, it can help in terms of employment and kind of life, generally relationships, but it's that internal intentness that comes with actually, I got a better understanding of who I am. And, you know, we always really promote when people say to us, older people saying, well, what's the point? You know, it's not going to change anything at this point. You know, I'm in my 70s, 80s, whatever it might be. But actually that contentness, I don't think you could, it's priceless, isn't it? You know, that, yeah, that value is just second to none. So
yeah, nothing like it. And I think it really can be life changing. It sounds really cheesy to say that, but it really can for people. And I think we'll speak to people that we maybe haven't seen since they've received their diagnosis, and, you know, and see the kind of the change in them and how much they've kind of achieved in that time, because simply having that, you know, feeling content in themselves and that real kind of understanding about who they are is just incredible. Lots of kind of things I was aware that I needed support with, or, you know, that I found challenging, but there's also lots of things that I wasn't. And I think even those kind of smaller things where I've now had the opportunity to have the support in place, I think, how did I go 30 years without that support? So it's, you know, it's just so, so important.
Yeah, because we're changing, aren't we, from a this is a problem to this is a strength. And how do you think people are feeling about that? How do you think society is changing to accommodate that?
Again, there's still a long way to go, but I think there's lots of, probably some of the strengths that I see with people that we support and that we work with would probably, you know, a lot of people out there may think that they're more of a, you know, a kind of a weakness actually with autistic people, because, you know, it's that real, I think sometimes that stereotypical, we must be really good at maths or, you know, something like that. Wish I was. but, you know, we see, you know, lots of really great, I mean, obviously problem solving and that kind of creative thinking, but also things like empathy. I think, you know, you wouldn't naturally, you know, just normally kind of link that with kind of autism, but actually a lot of autistic people are highly empathetic. And, you know, so we find we have people in our team, especially because they're kind of working with people that they're great at what they do because they are empathetic. And they, you know, they're so great at supporting people and just really get it. And that's why, you know, so we have a peer support practitioner and peer support worker roles and that peer-to-peer, because, you know, and that's one of their biggest strengths. And, you know, and things like resilience as well, especially with people that are kind of diagnosed later in life, that real kind of resilience and I think tenacity. They've had to be really tenacious to kind of get where they are. So there's so many strengths. And again, because autism and neurodivergence is so diverse, but they're definitely some of the kind of, you know, the big ones that we see.
And I think from an employer point of view and from a mum point of view, for me, being that person that allows or supports or provides that platform for someone to use their strengths to allow them to thrive and to flourish, I can't think of anything more rewarding. It's just been an absolute pleasure watching our blended team come together into its own community in its own right. And actually, we don't have us and them in terms of neurotypical versus neurodivergent. We all come together and we all celebrate and appreciate and respect each other's strengths. And similarly, the same as weaknesses, because we all have them. But providing that platform and so those basic accessibility things, watching people flourish has just been an absolute pleasure. When I talk about my daughter, I have to tell everyone that she's very amazing at gymnastics. It is a caveat, I'm afraid. It's in her consent clause. But providing that platform, you know, she is flourishing in a sport which is her interest. And, you know, what more could you want for someone to be so happy and content at meeting their kind of goals?
It is all just, you know, on paper, it all sounds like really simple things that can be implemented, but the difference is just, it is really, really incredible. And, you know, I know, you know, like you said, Kim, I think, you know, I've really found my kind of strengths, but it's because I'm so well supported and, you know, it's not something that I have to push for. It's just a given, I think, you know, definitely in our kind of workplace. That, you know, anyone, whether neurotypical or neurodivergent, you know, has access to that support. And again, like you said about the kind of the strengths and maybe the challenges that people have, because we have a blended team, we kind of just gel and kind of fill in those gaps and just, you know, and that's why we work so, you know, so well together.
So Kim and Moana from Autism Oxford, it's been lovely, lovely to chat to you.
Thank you for having me today. We've really enjoyed it.
Don't forget, you can catch more interviews like these by searching for the TED Learning Podcast on all the podcast platforms like Spotify and Podbean, etc. Or you can visit our website at tedlearning.co.uk.